everybody. Welcome to the Clinical Concepts Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. The reason that we decided that we were going to do an episode on RSV is very simple. We are seeing more RSV cases so far in the state of Pennsylvania than we have ever for this early in the cold and flu season. And we wanted to make sure that the EMS providers out there, as you are encountering these sick children or adults for that matter, had a good understanding of what it is that they are taking care of and how to best provide those patients with the care that they need. So what is RSV? RSV is a viral illness that affects the lower respiratory system. So a lot of people think that RSV is just a viral illness that little infants or children get. And although that is true, it is most prevalent in the pediatric age group. It is certainly possible for adults and specifically elderly patients to get RSV and become critically ill from it. A recent publication from the Pennsylvania Department of Health reported that in RSV patients, it is incredibly common for this illness to spread in the winter months, especially during indoor functions. And if you think about it, that makes sense. You know, you're more likely to be in close contact with someone during the winter months when it's cold outside and you can't be outside. And most people congregate inside for the holidays anyway. So most commonly contracted in the winter months, and it is spread via droplet aerosolization, so coughing, sneezing, etc. And of the people that get RSV, adults, pediatric patients, etc., most of those patients that have severe cases end up with significant cases of bronchitis or bronchiolitis, respectively, and about 14% of them require ICU care. So this is a significantly dangerous disease. It is a disease that is very well managed, but a disease that can be certainly detrimental to the right patient if they get it. Looking at some statistics, in the United States, some recent research has showed that it leads to about 58,000 hospitalizations and 100 to 500 deaths amongst children less than 5 years old, and 177,000 hospitalizations and 14,000 deaths amongst patients that are older than 65. So the RSV patient is one that we definitely have to be very careful of, because these patients have a high threshold to become critically ill. So what are we going to look for? When we see the RSV patient, again, this is something that is most prevalent either in the pediatric and infant patient or in the elderly. Again, certainly there are adult age group patients that can end up with RSV, specifically if they're around a small child or an elderly patient that has contracted it, but it is much less common. So these people generally present with a fever, a cough, wheezing, runny nose, honestly, some significantly generic complaints that often lead to just sort of them thinking, oh, I have a bad cold. However, when we get into little kids, specifically in infants and young children, these patients often have a typical response that is atypical. And what I mean by that is that they will sometimes fool you. What is normal for a little child is sometimes the abnormal response for an adult. So the young child or the infant with RSV, they might present with irritability, lethargy, poor feeding, malaise. A fever may or may not be present, although it is usually a fairly common finding in young children. And these patients, again, specifically young kids, are going to look sick when they end up with RSV. So we should be prepared for that, that sometimes the typical findings can be paired with atypical findings as well that may lead us to suspect RSV. So when we're managing a patient with a diagnosed case of RSV, perhaps they've seen their PCP or it's an interfacility transport, or perhaps they have a suspected RSV diagnosis, we as EMS providers, first and foremost, as always, need to make sure that we are safe. We cannot help anybody if we become sick or injured in the process. So Like any other kind of aerosolizing contagious illness, we should make sure that when we manage these patients, we have the appropriate PPE in place. What I would recommend to you is an N95 mask or equivalent. So maybe you're wearing a KN95 mask or a P100. Any of that upper level respiratory protection will suffice. And with that, please make sure that you are wearing eye protection and gloves. Droplets can become contracted through the mucosal membranes of your eyes, so it is important that we are wearing eye protection. Now, I know that this is easier than it has ever been because of everyone wearing the PPE for COVID patients or suspected COVID patients. At the service that I work for, it is an N95 mask and eye protection in addition to gloves, whether they have COVID or not, out of an abundance of caution. And we did this very simply because we took care of a lot of COVID patients that didn't present with COVID symptoms. So we wanted to make sure that we protected people all the time. RSV is no different. If we encounter an RSV patient that we suspect has an RSV diagnosis or already has one, we should use the same kind of droplet precautions that we would use for everybody else. And if you think about it, if you reflect back onto your career, we took care of these patients for years without the appropriate PPE in place. We always knew that we should. It was just a thing that nobody did, unfortunately, in EMS. And COVID has really given us a refreshing excuse to relook at our PPE allocations and making sure that we have the appropriate level of protection when managing the appropriate patient. So that is what I would recommend for the EMS provider. In addition, if it's an adult patient or an elderly patient, or even an older child that has the ability to effectively wear a surgical mask, I would recommend reverse isolating them if at all possible. This just adds an extra layer of protection, not just for you, but for your the caregivers that may be accompanying the patients or other healthcare providers. Additionally, if you're an EMS service that has some kind of an isolation cover for your stretchers, I would recommend that as well. I think that these are a great tool that we should have been using for a long time, even prior to COVID. And now we have an excuse to use them. So if I had an adult patient that was able to wear a surgical mask, I would certainly reverse isolate them. If I had a child who was able to wear a surgical mask, perhaps they're a school age child and they're sort of used to this, then certainly reverse isolate them. If not, obviously it's not worth the fight trying to put a mask on a 2-year-old. But if we have the ability to reverse isolate them or their parents or anyone else, I think that that is definitely worth doing. So what about patient assessment? If we have a patient that we suspect may have RSV, it's critical that we do a really thorough patient assessment to ensure that we don't miss anything, specifically in children. Children will compensate for a long time, and then all of a sudden they will appear critically ill. But we can get on top of it much earlier with a good assessment. So in the sick child, my recommendations to you would be, especially this time of year, parents dress their children, specifically young babies, in layers, and they're in car seats. And we often will take them to the hospital and we will take them into the hospital and we'll say something to the effect of, this is a sick kid, or this kid is short of breath. And the nursing staff or the physician staff in the hospital will often look at us with a sort of peculiar looking face because they're still in all of these clothes. So if we take care of a sick child who we suspect has RSV or that we know has RSV, my recommendation to you would be to expose that child. Obviously, do our best to keep them warm in the ambulance or in their home or wherever you might be, but expose that child so we can look for things like accessory muscle usage, intercostal retractions, et cetera, to really get a good look at how that child is breathing and what their respiratory effort is. Because remember, this is a disease of the respiratory system. The other thing that I would do is make sure that we take a good look at their capillary refill, as well as their skin color, their mucous membranes, the fontanelles, if they fit that age group, to evaluate their hydration status. Remember, kids with RSV will sometimes present with irritability, poor feeding, et cetera, which is going to cause them to become dehydrated. So it is important that we assess for those things. And again, just our normal standard head-to-toe thorough physical examination. in any sick kid that I take care of, my recommendation to you would be to plan ahead. So when I take care of a sick kid in the ambulance, what I will do is we use the Braslow tape. So I will take out my Braslow tape. I will measure that child. I will then take my Sharpie and I will take the sheet of the stretcher, and right above their head, I will write whatever color that they fell in on the Braslow tape. So I might write blue. And then above that, or underneath that, rather, I will write the patient's weight in kilos, their epinephrine dose in cardiac arrest, and their endotracheal tube size. And I do that for a couple of different reasons. And that way, when I have this kid, if this kid deteriorates, I have already have my immediate life-saving intervention dosing figured out. The other reason that I do it is so if anyone else were to join me in the ambulance, perhaps another provider, medical backup, whatever it is, when they enter the ambulance, they also have that information available to them, and we don't have to try to do math in a stressful situation that just became more stressful. I do this for every child that I take care of, whether they have a stubbed toe or they are in cardiac arrest or anything in between. I find this to be a really good habit, and if I do it all the time, I won't forget to do it when it matters. So that would be my recommendation to you. In the adult patient, this is going to present to you almost like a sepsis and shortness of breath patient came together. So this is going to be a patient that looks ill in the adult with RSV. This is a patient that is going to be often febrile and a patient that is going to perhaps be a little bit short of breath. They're going to have poor skin signs. They're going to look a little bit dehydrated. They're going to look like that sick septic patient. So if we are an ALS provider, I would recommend that we get all of our hemodynamic monitoring in place, cardiac monitoring, blood pressure monitoring. Remember, if you're using NIBP blood pressures, you're doing yourself a disservice if you are not checking manual blood pressures first. So get a good baseline with a manual blood pressure, and then feel free to use your NIBP cuff. My recommendation to you would be, even if you are still using your NIBP cuff, to still assess a manual blood pressure every second or third pressure, just to make sure that we are maintaining an accurate baseline. Pulse oximetry monitoring is always very important. End-tidal CO2 monitoring, cannot stress it enough. In 2022, you got to be using end-tidal. It is so important. Get a good end-tidal reading on those patients. Get that nasal cannula on them, whether they are an adult or a pediatric patient, and assess their ventilatory status. That will tell you so much about that patient. And then finally, serum glucose assessments. We need to make sure that we rule in and we rule out glycogen storage disease in these patients, whether they are adult or pediatric. In the septic patient, in the RSVP patient, the RSVP patient, in the RSV patient, it is important that we get beyond that, we're on top of this, because as they get sicker, they can often have a fluctuation in serum glucose levels. If you're a BLS provider, that's okay. You can still do almost all of the same monitoring that we can do as ALS providers. Other than cardiac monitoring, you can still do blood pressure monitoring. You can still do pulse oximetry monitoring. You can still do serum glucose assessments. In the state of Pennsylvania, end-tidal CO2 monitoring for BLS providers is a medical director endorsement skill. So it is technically an ALS skill, but should your medical director approve BLS providers at your service to use end-tidal CO2 monitoring, then you are able to do that as well. We have done that where I work, and it is a tremendous thing to allow those EMTs to be able to have an understanding of end-tidal CO2 and use it often. So how are we going to manage these patients? We've talked about their assessment. We've talked about getting a good picture of what is going on. And now it's time to manage them. So a couple things. If they are an adult patient, remember that this is a respiratory disease, and we don't ever want to lay respiratory patients flat. If we lay a respiratory patient flat, they often will become sicker. So we want to stay away from that, keeping them as upright as possible in a position of comfort. Likewise, I would recommend that you do the same thing in your pediatric patients. Get them in the most upright position possible. So if we are transporting a pediatric patient in an ambulance, remember they need to be secured in a pediatric approved transport device. And those vary dependent upon brand and what your service uses. Where I work, we use the NeoMate for patients 5 to 14 pounds, so 2.3 to 6.4 kilos. And then the PDMate Plus for patients 10 to 100 pounds, 4.5 to 45.4 kilos. That's what we use. They work very well. There are several different types of devices out there on the market. I, again, don't own any financial interest in any of them, but you definitely have to have something. And remember that as we put them on the stretcher, if we can keep the pediatric patient in an upright position as well, that will benefit them. So we want to keep them as upright as we possibly can in a position of comfort to promote the highest level of respiratory efficiency as possible. Because remember, in the RSV patient, when they end up with cases of bronchitis and bronchiolitis, they are having essentially a fluid buildup and swelling of their bronchus and their bronchioles. And when this happens, they have a more difficult time clearing their airways because of that, because of those secretions. And also remember that in the young child, they don't understand how to cough and clear their airway at baseline. So anything that we can do to help them positioning wise is very important. We want to make sure that we are also checking their temperatures in the ambulance, whether that be orally or temporally. It is important that we are taking temperatures on every patient. If you are taking an adult patient and you take an oral temperature, that's fine. Please just remember that in the pediatric patient, if you take an oral temperature, that child has to be old enough to understand how to keep that thermometer under their tongue. If we introduce a thermometer into the tongue of a young child that is unable to understand what to do with it, that can cause oral trauma, number one. But secondly, and perhaps more frightening, is bradycardia secondary to vagus nerve stimulus. So very important that we take a temporal temperature in the child who is unable to manage the thermometer being in their mouth. Remember that these patients also are going to require aggressive airway care. So oxygenation, bag valve mask ventilation, when that's indicated. And if you are caring for an RSV patient, because of the bronchoconstriction that occurs from the mucus in their airways, it is certainly beneficial to be using nebulized bronchodilators in the form of albuterol if there's wheezing present in these patients. Any RSV patient that is sick enough to get bag valve mask ventilation should also receive nebulized bronchodilators via the bag valve mask. So our recommendation is 2.5 milligram increments with a half a milligram of nebulized ipratropium bromide mixed in. That will help dry up the secretions. Just be cautious of tachyarrhythmias when we are administering bronchodilators. Also, in these patients, should they develop a state of shock, because remember, they are going to be a little bit volume depleted from being septic, we can administer volume boluses to them. In our service, we use normal saline, but whatever fluid volume substance you are using, 20 milliliters per kilo is the standard dosing for that. But also remember that if we are volume resuscitating a kid, we should be doing that appropriately with a 60cc syringe and a three-way stopcock to ensure that we don't volume overload them. Indicators of shock in the pediatric patient: delayed capillary refill, heart rate greater than or equal to 200 beats per minute, a respiratory rate greater than or equal to 60 breaths per minute, or systolic blood pressure that's less than appropriate. So that's 70 plus 2 times their age formula. So please do ensure that we are on top of shock in these RSV patients. If they are a little bit hypoglycemic from the viral illness, we can certainly replace anybody's fluid. Replace anybody's glucose content with 10% dextrose. That is a safe solution for everyone that we care for: adults, infants, pediatrics, etc. And the recommended dose for that is 5 milliliters per kilo for a serum glucose less than 60 milligrams per deciliter. So ensure that we are providing them with the appropriate dosing. It's not just give the whole bag. please make sure that we dose that dextrose appropriately. And before you initiate transport of this patient, specifically in the pediatric patient, consider doing a destination consult with medical direction or medical control. Because sometimes these patients require transport to a comprehensive children's center versus the local facility. Sometimes they're okay to go to the local facility depending upon what that facility is comfortable handling and how progressed that illness is. But all in all, in transporting the pediatric patient with RSV or suspected RSV, it is important that we consider doing a destination consult first, because if we take that patient to the local center and they end up needing to go to the comprehensive children's center anyway, we've really just sort of delayed the process. Obviously, unless we have an immediate life threat that we need to be corrected first, that's obviously perfectly acceptable. Go to the local center. But if we need to take them to the comprehensive center anyway, it's sometimes most beneficial just to take them there directly and cut out the middleman. So consider doing a destination consult for those patients prior to initiating transport. And then also remember, in the pediatric patient specifically with RSV, if they are febrile, pediatric patients are sometimes prone to suffering from febrile seizures. So if we have the patient who is seizing because they are febrile, remember that we need to provide good seizure care. So what does that look like? Making sure that we are managing their airway, protecting their airway, and if needed, administering them a benzodiazepine to help control their seizures. It is perfectly safe and perfectly appropriate to administer benzos to the seizing pediatric patient if it is warranted. That is a 0.1 milligram per kilo dose of midazolam. That is what most places are using for seizure control. That is what I would recommend that you use. That is what we use where we work for seizure management. So 0.1 milligrams per kilo of midazolam in the pediatric seizure patient. Just remember that benzos have a tendency to make patients hypotensive. So if they are sick enough to get a benzo, they are also sick enough to probably get a fluid bolus. And I would say that that holds true for the adult patient as well. Also remember that adult patients with fevers are likely to seize as well. Certainly not as common as it is in pediatric patients, but it can still happen. So don't be afraid to treat their fever with an antipyretic in the ambulance, such as acetaminophen or Tylenol. Certainly would not be afraid to do that as well. And I think that it's something that we often overlook because we get so tied up in treating the other things in the adult patient, such as the sepsis or the shock, that we forget that sometimes it is very beneficial to treat the fever. So that was my brief overview on RSV. So a couple quick pearls to take with you. Remember that RSV is a disease of the lower respiratory system. So the bronchus and the bronchioles, they become bronchoconstricted and have a mucus buildup, which causes these patients to have a viral illness. They can present with fevers, cough, wheezing, rhinorrhea. Sometimes in the pediatric patient, the typical response or typical symptoms are atypical. So irritability, lethargy, poor feeding, fever may or may not be there. Do that good physical exam to help get you where you need to be. When we're taking care of them, make sure that we are wearing appropriate PPE, such as an N95 or equivalent, eye protection and gloves. And when we manage them, making sure that we have not only all of our appropriate hemodynamic monitoring in place, but that we are managing fevers if we have the ability to do so with things like antipyretics. We are treating them for shock with volume replenishment. We are treating their glycogen storage diseases, and we are managing their seizures if it is appropriate. RSV is a scary illness. It is scary for everyone involved, not just the patients, but also their parents. Specifically in the pediatric patients, nobody wants to see a sick child. So it is important that we assist mom and dad through these through our care, explain to them what we're doing. Remember that it's not appropriate to just say, I'll take care of your kid, and take the kid and put them in the ambulance and leave mom and dad in the dark. Let them be a part of their care. Let them help you. It is a good resource. And I know that we've talked a lot about the pediatric management in RSV, but also remember that this could be an adult or elderly patient as well, specifically those that are immunocompromised or reside in nursing facilities. So that's all I have for you for RSV. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at clinicalconceptspodcast@gmail.com. Remember that Thursday, November 3rd of this coming week is the Clinical Concepts Zoom meeting with author Kevin Hazard in his new book, American Sirens, the story of Freedom House Ambulance in the city of Pittsburgh. So you don't want to miss it. If you haven't registered for that yet, you can check out our Facebook page. The registration information is up there. Please make sure that you do that. We will be recording the live session for a podcast episode that will be released later in the week. So again, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And until next time, stay safe and do good care.